Good morning and welcome to Catholic Views. I'm Renee Kranz. Today on the program, we'll be talking to Deacon Tony Klein about his time at seminary in Rome, his trip home amid coronavirus, and his upcoming ordination to the priesthood. I hope you'll join us for that interview. First, we'll hear our readings for this Sunday. Renee Leach with the first and second readings, and Father Brian Eckrich with the gospel.
A reading from the Acts of the Apostles. Then Peter stood up with the 11, raised his voice, and proclaimed, "You who are Jews, indeed all of you staying in Jerusalem, let this be known to you and listen to my words. You who are Israelites, hear these words. Jesus the Nazarene was a man commended to you by God with mighty deeds, wonders, and signs, which God worked through him in your midst, as you yourselves know. This man, delivered up by the set plan and foreknowledge of God, you killed, using lawless men to crucify him. But God raised him up, releasing him from the throes of death, because it was impossible for him to be held by it. For David says of him, 'I saw the Lord ever before me. With him at my right hand, I shall not be disturbed.' Therefore, my heart has been glad and my tongue has exulted. My flesh too will dwell in hope, because you will not abandon my soul to the nether world, nor will you suffer your Holy One to see corruption. You have made known to me the paths of life. You will fill me with joy in your presence. My brothers, one can confidently say to you about the patriarch David that he died and was buried, and his tomb is in our midst to this day. But since he was a prophet and knew that God had sworn an oath to him that he would set one of his descendants upon his throne, he foresaw and spoke of the resurrection of the Christ, that neither was he abandoned to the netherworld, nor did his flesh see corruption. God raised this Jesus. Of this we are all witnesses. Exalted at the right hand of God, he received the promise of the Holy Spirit from the Father and poured him forth as you see and hear." The word of the Lord. A reading from the first letter of St. Peter. Beloved, if you invoke as Father him who judges impartially according to each one's works, conduct yourselves with reverence during the time of your sojourning, realizing that you were ransomed from your futile conduct, handed on by your ancestors, not with perishable things like silver or gold, but with the precious blood of Christ, as of a spotless, unblemished lamb. He was known before the foundation of the world, but revealed in the final time for you, who through him believed in God, who raised him from the dead and gave him glory, so that your faith and hope are in God. The word of the Lord.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. That very day, the first day of the week, two of Jesus' disciples were going to a village 7 miles from Jerusalem called Emmaus, and they were conversing about all the things that had occurred. And it happened that while they were conversing and debating, Jesus himself drew near and walked with them, but their eyes were prevented from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing as you walk along?" They stopped, looking downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, said to him in reply, "Are you the only visitor to Jerusalem who does not know of the things that have taken place there in these days?" And he replied to them, "What sort of things?" They said to him, "The things that happened to Jesus the Nazarene, who was a prophet mighty in deed and word before God and all the people. How our chief priests and the rulers both handed him over to a sentence of death and crucified him. But we were hoping that he would be the one to redeem Israel. And besides all this, it is now the third day since this took place. Some women from our group, however, have astounded us. They were at the tomb early in the morning and did not find his body. They came back and reported that they had indeed seen a vision of angels who announced that he was alive. Some of those with us went to the tomb and found things just as the women had described. But him they did not see. And he said to them, "Oh, how foolish you are, how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets spoke. Was it not necessary that the Christ should suffer these things and enter into his glory?" Then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them what referred to him in all the scriptures. As they had approached the village to which they were going, he gave the impression that he was going on farther, but they urged him, "Stay with us, for it is nearly evening and the day is almost over." So he went in to stay with them. And it happened that while he was with them at table, he took bread and said the blessing, broke it and gave it to them. With that, their eyes were opened and they recognized him, but he vanished from their sight. Then they said to each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he spoke to us on the way and opened the scriptures to us?" So they set out at once and returned to Jerusalem, where they found gathered together the 11 and those with them who were saying, "The Lord has truly been raised and has appeared to Simon." Then the two recounted what had taken place on the way and how he was made known to them in the breaking of the bread. The Gospel of the Lord.
This morning on Catholic Views, we have Deacon Tony Klein in the studio with us. Good morning, Deacon Tony.
Good morning.
How are you?
Great.
Good.
Thanks for having me.
Yep. We're going to talk about your time in seminary in Rome. And a little bit about your call to priesthood, too. So let's talk about your time in Rome first. I know that's a little out of order, but I really want to know what it was like in Rome in general. And just, I mean, lots of us want to go to Rome or Italy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it was, I think it was a real surprise for about 4 years ago when I was asked to go over there and study. Because I know we have sent guys over there before, but it's not like the predominant place that we send.
Right.
And so I was a little surprised, but I was very grateful. I mean, I was open to really going to seminary wherever Bishop Swain thought that would be best for me. I really thought he made, you know, a prayerful decision about each of us where would be a good place to go. And so I really trusted that it's what he wanted and that it was what the Lord wanted. And there definitely was an excitement on my end.
Yeah.
There were also, you know, a few like reservations.
Sure.
You know,
it's a long way from home.
Yeah. You're moving across the world for 4 years. And especially, you know, I have a sister who is a nun. And so, my oldest sister who's married, she was kind of the only one now left at home.
You're just abandoning your parents.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So just with her and, you know, having kids, knowing that I was going to be away from that for a few years and then missing holidays and things like that where the family is usually together. So it wasn't all just like a 4-year vacation excitement. But the Lord definitely, I think, worked through a lot of those sacrifices.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I think that was one of the biggest graces that I would notice during those holidays away is, one, I mean, the sign that I missed home and missed my being with my family was a sign that I love my family.
Sure, yeah.
And that I enjoy being with them, especially on, you know, those holidays. So that was a good sign.
Yeah.
But also to celebrate it in the context of a seminary community was interesting. And it was really, beautiful. I mean, for Thanksgiving, for us to have a room full of 200 plus, usually about 300 Americans, we'd have a big mass and then we'd have a nice big Thanksgiving meal. Of course, there had to be pasta because all of our cooks are Italian.
Of course.
So they made like pumpkin stuffed ravioli.
They're like sweet potatoes. What is this? You can't put marshmallows in that.
Exactly. But they've been doing this sort of thing for long enough that, you know, they've come to learn how to make stuffing and turkey and
sure.
all the American Thanksgiving staples.
Right.
But just to celebrate that with a bunch of Americans away from America, and really kind of look at the founding of our country, in a more profound way than I have done in some of my Thanksgivings here.
Sure.
Where a lot of times it can be catching up with family and things like that, which are great things about the holiday. But really, I think we were forced to like look at, okay, what are we celebrating? And same sort of thing with Christmas and Easter.
Yep.
We were there for, you know, to celebrate the birth of Christ.
Right.
And we were there to celebrate his resurrection for Easter.
Mm-hmm.
And so when some of those traditions that we have from a family standpoint were taken away, we were left to be like, okay, well, what is the tradition that's still here?
Right.
And really kind of got to see the roots of these holidays that we have that are so ingrained in us as a culture, and really to celebrate them wholeheartedly for what they are. So that was one kind of surprising aspect.
Mm-hmm.
I think obviously the fact that you're living and studying in Rome, I mean, we're about a 10-minute or less walk from the Vatican.
Okay.
And so just your proximity to the Holy Father, and your ability to see him on almost every Sunday, if you wanted, down for the Angelus that he offers.
Right.
He prays. So, I mean, the beauty to be able to pray with him and to be able to attend some of the masses there with him, as well as to see the remarkable history of the church to walk around and to see, you know, churches that are dedicated to saints or in honor of certain saints that had a prominent, either a prominent role in this particular part of Rome, but some of them in a particular way, like an extremely prominent part of the history of the church as a whole.
Did you find a favorite church while you were there?
Well, I mean, there are a number of like St. Peter's is in many ways a favorite. I was ordained a deacon there. So there's also a little like nostalgia in that sense. One church that kind of surprised me is called St. Mary of the Soul, is how it's translated. So it's the church for the German pilgrims and German-speaking people in Rome. But so part of that, because it's run by Germans, it's very clean.
Sure, of course.
It's kept up very well. But there's an altar in the back where the painting, the altar painting is of St. Lambert, the martyrdom of St. Lambert.
Okay.
And being from St. Lambert Parish, when a friend actually pointed it out and he said, hey, do you know, there's a picture of his martyrdom here. And so I went and I really just started to love that church. And in a way, also being German, it kind of served as a little bit of like a reminder of home and a reminder of where I've come from.
Right.
In the sense that, I mean, I'm aware for a certain, like I'm aware of some of the ways that God has been working in my life to lead me to here.
Mm-hmm.
But that church in a way was a reminder that there are so many ways that I never knew and still probably won't see in this life of the ways that he has been preparing my path. The people that he's put in my life, things that, even at St. Lambert, just in the many ways, great and small, that he has been preparing me for this.
Right.
And I don't think that's exclusive to me or exclusive to people with a vocation to the priesthood. I really think it's everyone.
For sure.
The God, he totally has been planting seeds and helping to pave the path for ultimately our vocation of sanctity, of holiness.
Right.
And we get glimpses of them, but ultimately I don't think we'll see all of them until the next life.
Oh, for sure.
So that church in a way kind of reminded me of that. You know, the prayers even that St. Lambert would have had for me, you know, for instance, as I received my first communion there. And I never really thought of the fact that St. Lambert could actually be interceding for us and praying for us.
Right. Good point.
So, it was, I had my first Mass of Thanksgiving there after diaconate ordination with a ton of St. Lambert pilgrims and family and friends that were there. Father Haggerty celebrated, who's the pastor of St. Lambert here.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a place that has won a little place in my heart.
Very good. So you left to come back home in March.
Yes.
And did you already notice the coronavirus pandemic becoming an issue there for you guys? Or had it not really affected your life yet there?
It had definitely affected our lives, but not quite as much as I think the newspapers and the headlines and stuff,
well, that's shocking.
At least here, made it sound like.
Sure.
And part of that is because it really took off in Northern Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where it hit the hardest. We as a seminary, so what the case for us, we lived in the seminary building, but we go out into the city to a couple different universities for school, for classes. And so things kind of happened in progression, kind of like they did here, where the schools closed and we moved to online learning of some sort. And that happened for about a week. And then after that week, week and a half or so, then the seminary told us that we could, if we had permission from our diocese and if it would be better for us, even just psychological, spiritual health, if you were worried about physical health, that you could leave, mm-hmm. you could come back home if you had permission from your diocese.
Mm-hmm.
And I really had no desire to leave. So we weren't leaving the seminary. It's a fairly large complex, at least for being in the middle of a big city. You know, we have some space. And so we could walk around. We still had chapels. We had our spiritual directors. We had a lot of stability. And the seminary community stayed very healthy, especially physically, which was a big worry of a lot of people, including my family, my mom.
Sure.
But for all those reasons, I felt very secure and stable to stay there, especially approaching ordination. I wanted a place of stability where I could continue to kind of have stability, especially in the spiritual life, to have access to the sacraments and to my spiritual director. So in talking with Bishop DeGrude and Father Samson, as well as my spiritual director, and just seeing that I wanted to stay and that those were matched desires that they all had and they respected, the only sort of reservation I had was whether or not travel would be impossible.
Right, at some point. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so this is kind of before it had really taken off in the States. This is about 4 days. I remember talking to Father Samson, and he's like, why are you guys making this such a big deal? And I think this was on like a Monday or Tuesday, and I think by Friday, schools here had said, we're canceling school starting Monday.
Right.
So it really, this was right before it came here. And so Father Samson, I think, was a little like, kind of like, oh, yeah, you guys should stay. Why would you come home?
Yeah. It's no big deal.
But as things progressed, the seminary, so I'd say about half the seminary community left. A number of them were people that either were worried about getting stuck, especially those preparing for ordination this summer.
Yep.
I kind of thought, I said, I think it sounds somewhat ridiculous to think that I wouldn't be able to find any flights here home to the United States in the next 2 months.
Yes.
Like if that's the point that we come to, I think we've got a lot of bigger issues that are going on.
Exactly.
So I ended up staying along with Zach Schaefauer, the other Sioux Falls seminarian over there. And that was for the course of about 2 weeks where we finally got into a place of stability. We kind of readjusted to the new community that was there. You know, about half the guys left. And we as a seminary, I mean, took certain precautions. We spaced out.
But a little social distancing there.
Exactly. Yeah. We still did it. But we also lived together. And so we knew, like, none of us have probably been exposed to it since we've been locked in.
Right.
We had a few workers in and out, but they had precautions. And so I thought for our health, everything, we were very stable. And about 2 weeks after that initial wave of seminarians left, then the rector, in talking with some of the bishops that are in charge of, that are on the board for the seminary, as well as, I think, talking to Callista Gingrich, who's the ambassador to the Holy See, just decided that after the Italian prime minister said it's possible that goods won't be quite as mobile, the rector didn't want to be in a position where he has to tell the bishops, well, I starved your seminarians because we ran out of food, which
we can't feed them.
Probably would not have happened,
but
I understand it'd be a very difficult position to be in to have to make that. Even if that's unlikely, if it is even a possibility at all that he didn't want 100 of us to be stuck all in one place.
Right.
So he ended up telling us that, you know, he gave us about a week. He said, pack up, you know, you can come back at some point to pack up your rooms, to finish exams, whenever that is going to be.
Yeah.
So within that week, we all left and...
And the flight was okay coming back?
Yeah, it was the emptiest flight I've ever...
especially from Italy.
Exactly. So a series of empty flights. So from Italy to New York, I think it was probably about 40% full. And
wow.
So I had a plethora of seats around me, which I really appreciated.
Yeah.
And you could, there was a sort of thing like when we got off the airplane in New York at JFK and... You kind of just felt like the bad guy,
right?
Because you walk
like
out,
you're bringing it all
and
here.
They're like, oh, the Rome flight's here, get away.
Where's the bubble to put them
yeah,
in,
exactly.
Right?
And, but we had our masks on, and I'd say of that 40% or so full flight, at least half were from the seminary.
Sure.
And so we were all together. None of us have shown any symptoms or signs.
Now you quarantined a little bit when you got back.
Yep.
Is that right? For
yep.
a couple weeks.
Yeah, so we had to do a 2-week quarantine. So there were a few of us that were at a cabin up in northern South Dakota. People make it sound like it'd be, you know, this torturous time. And maybe depending on your circumstances, it might be.
What type of person you are, maybe.
No, we had a very good setup. We were at a cabin and we saw the lake thaw. You know, just all sorts of things that were kind of cool.
Yeah.
We were able to get the Blessed Sacrament. From the priest up there, we didn't have mass or we were without the sacraments for a couple of weeks.
Sure.
So I think that was sort of the biggest, adjustment, which I know 99% of the faithful are in that same boat.
Yep. So now you're healthy. Good to go.
Yeah. Yep.
And you're hanging out in Harrisburg, I understand.
That's right.
With Father John Rutten.
With Father John Rutten.
Yeah. How's that been?
It's been great.
Good.
Yeah.
He's treating you okay.
He's treating me well. I'm treating him the best that I can. No, we're having a good time. He's working from home. We have mass there in the chapel. There's a chapel there. It's been good to finally just have a little place of stability where I know that, okay, I can unpack my stuff and I'll be here at least for like a couple months. You
right.
know, it's not
right.
just a 1 or 2 week thing.
Yeah.
So I can say that I was not excited to leave Rome.
Sure.
In that way, especially, but that doesn't mean that I wasn't excited to come back.
Yeah.
And I knew that coming back didn't mean I was going to be able to do all these assignment things because I knew we were kind of shut down.
Yeah.
But there's been something just about being back in the diocese that's been very consoling.
Well, we're glad you're here and safe.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we worry about our seminarians once in a while.
I know. Did my mom tell you to say that?
She did not. I won't rat her out. So real quick, we have a few minutes. Can you tell me what your call, when you heard the call to the priesthood?
Yeah, I think it kind of happened not like instantaneously.
Mm-hmm.
It happened pretty gradually, I'd say. As I was learning to serve for Mass and as I started to serve, I remember the pastor at the time, he just kind of said, you know, you're doing great up there. You know, we need good young men like you to be priests up there someday. And, you know, I think I was fourth grade, so that kind of went in one ear and out the other. But there was something about it, I guess, that stuck because I still remember it.
Right.
And it was about freshman year of high school. I was doing a search retreat for confirmation, and I wasn't at all resistant to being there, but I can't say that I was, you know, ecstatic about going on the retreat for the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But while I was there, I just remember seeing some of my peers, you know, people that I had known from high school that were so excited to be there,
right.
And excited to pray and excited to go to Mass. And there was this sort of life of being a Catholic that I hadn't quite seen manifested in that way, especially from people my age.
Sure.
And so all of a sudden I was like, I want that. I want whatever they've got. And so that led me to get a little more involved at the campus ministry department at O'Gorman. Which is where I ended up joining a men's group that we had met. I mean, 16-year-old men,
right.
a young men's group.
Yeah.
Where we had talked just kind of about Christian manhood and what that means with the campus minister. But one week he had two Ruttons come in
and
speak to us about vocations. So Joe Rutten, who at the time was teaching at O'Gorman, mm-hmm. and then Father Paul Rutten, who mm-hmm. at the time was vocations director. And they both talked about their time in seminary and how influential that was, really, just to like give God the time
right.
to say, what do you want from me, Lord? And especially Joe Rutten, he said, you know, I'm a better man, a better husband for having allowed God the, not, I don't think he said allow God the chance or something, right. but to really let God be the director of his life, right. of what he's called to do.
Right.
And that sort of broke down some of my fears, because mm-hmm. We had been praying a vocations prayer as a family and at the parish. And so this idea of a vocation wasn't totally foreign.
Right.
But at the time I kind of was like, well, you have to be sure, you know, like mm-hmm. you only go to seminary when you know you're supposed to be a priest.
Right.
And at 16, I was like, I don't know. I want to be a priest. I really don't want to be a priest, actually. Yeah. So hearing him say that kind of broke down some of my fears.
Sure.
And so I just started praying over those next couple years in high school. Like, Lord, I think you have a plan for me. You made me for something. So whatever that is, reveal it.
Yeah.
Let me know. And about senior year, this idea of the priesthood hadn't really gone away. But I didn't necessarily, I was open to it, but I couldn't really say like, yes, I'm so sure about this, but I was like, you know, I gotta give God a chance. And so I went on a seminary visit, and in short, just the seminarians that I met, really showed me how much joy they had from discerning this call.
Right.
And of all the other places that I visit, nothing really gave me the peace that did.
Yeah.
So I went there, and I'd say it was a few years into college seminary at St. John Vianney where I started to realize that my prayer had shifted from, Lord, I'll do this if you want me to, Lord, I think I actually want this too.
Yeah.
I think I actually have the heart that has these desires, and the priesthood fulfills these in a way that I never knew they could.
Yeah.
So
that's great. And then off you went.
And then I kept on running from there. Yeah.
Well, good. And hopefully we will get to have ordination at the end of the month. Well, we'll have it sometime.
We'll have it at some point, whether or not it's very public. I think it will for sure be at least streamed.
Yes. But, yeah. We'll get it some way, one way or another. Well, I really appreciate you coming in today, Tony. It's very interesting to hear about your time in Rome.
Thank you for having me. And thank you all for your prayers for myself and for Deacon Michael Kapperman as we approach ordination.
Yep, you've got him. All right, that's it for us today. We'll see you next Sunday on more for Catholic Views.